You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of October, a day to digest that the Millers have sold the Jazz to Ryan and Ashley Smith. Plus, ton of draft news out in the world. The NBA negotiations for a start have started. Daryl Morey's in Philadelphia. What does it mean? And eventually, just maybe, we get to Austin Rivers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. But maybe not. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Thanks so much for tuning in. Super appreciate it. Wow. What a day yesterday. I recorded the pod right after, and I think you kind of got from the tone, if you listened to yesterday's show, if you didn't, please go back and do that. I tried to understand the magnitude of it and tried to do a good job of portraying to you what I thought was going on and what was important, and hopefully I did that. So thank you very much for trusting me on a day in which that news was that important. I said it yesterday. I really feel we've gone on long enough together now. I feel like we have a relationship that's important in that trust. And yesterday felt like a really significant day to me to be there with you and share that with you. And appreciate a lot of you who emailed me back. All right, let's get to a day to digest. I joked a little bit in the open. There's just a lot of news that's piling up. So we're going to get to it. I don't know if we'll get to the Austin Rivers free agent breakdown or the Minnesota Timberwolves team breakdown with the amount of news that's out there. And so I'll try to dig into everything else and get to it. All right. So the biggest thing, as I've sat on it for a day or less than a day, probably about 24 hours now, it is going to come to my personal experiences. I was in Seattle and worked for the Ackerley family when they sold the Seattle Supersonics to Howard Schultz. And Howard Schultz was a star, was in some ways, there was like, felt like there was this kind of similarity. Young, taking over from a long time ownership. And he ended up, but he had no ties at all to Seattle. He had started Starbucks there and he lived there, but he was a New Yorker who went to Michigan State. And when it got tough and he quit, he didn't care about the city. He didn't have a social group where when he bailed out on a community trust, of, as he called it, of the Seattle Supersonics and undercut the city to make millions to sell it, he didn't have a social group of friends who had been growing up going to games who he had to go look at and say, yeah, I just sold your franchise out from under you. He didn't have that. The local tie that Ryan Smith, born in Oregon, but came to Utah, played junior jazz basketball, dad was a professor at BYU, built his company here, already had an opportunity to take the his business to Silicon Valley. Like when he's building Qualtrics, you know, and he's searching for a CFO or a CMO or whatever, CTO, he's going to Seattle and San Francisco and trying to hire these people and bring them to Utah. Might have been probably be interesting to talk to Ryan. I'm going to guess that was one of the larger challenges of how do you get these people that are the best in the world that are working in Seattle and San Francisco and LA or maybe even New York and get them to come to Utah. Like there's a very interesting quote by Ryan in a Salt Lake Tribune article about him in which he basically says, hey, we've got this great place and this tech possibility, but we're a little quirky and we've got to figure out how to make Utah more welcoming. I'm guessing that that quote really comes from the fact that keeping Qualtrics in Utah and doing all this hiring was not the easiest thing in the world. So the number one takeaway I have, and this is certainly driven by my life experiences, having literally gone through a guy quitting on a franchise. Because when it got right down to it, there was nothing after 5 years in that franchise. He bought it in January of 2001. And then he quit when it didn't go his way 5 years later and undercut every Seattle owner there to sell it in a pretty questionable move. I can't see that happening with someone who has deep ties to the community whose social circle is built around other Jazz fans who this is a part of who they are. There just cannot be a big enough deal played in this story that we had a buyer in the state of Utah who not only had the wealth to play with the big boys of the NBA, but also had the ties to Utah. Like, it's the greatest gift of this whole story. Because you could have had the person who had the business success in Utah, but no ties to Utah, as is the example of Howard Schultz, and ends up, when it gets to tough times, he doesn't really have the fortitude or the connection or the heart to deal with the pain because he didn't have a tie to the community. Or the history of Gus Williams and Freddie Brown, Downtown Brown, and the way that Ryan has a tie to the Karl Malones and the John Stocktons and the Jeff Hornacek and the Greg Ostertag and the Adam Key. Like, it's all there. That's the number one takeaway. And we should be just jumping for joy in Utah that that happened. The second thing we probably should be jumping for joy is I was on with Jake Scott and Gordon Monson yesterday, and they asked me if you could give Ryan Smith an answer to what the model ownership would be, what would you say? What would you tell him? I would never be so presumptuous to give that answer to Ryan Smith, but in the ilk of the question, what I thought was interesting is that there is no definition, right? Like, what is great ownership? You know, Joe Lacob has done a nice job with the Warriors, but I think a lot of people would say he's been a little bit too boastful in claiming that he has the magic sauce. And Dan Gilbert's been all over the place in Cleveland and got a championship. And Mark Cuban, like, is that a good owner? Like, I don't know the answer. I answered the Spurs' Peter Holt, but that's the old school, buy the franchise and stay away and let him run it. You know what? When you're 43 years old and you pay $1.6 billion for a franchise, staying away and letting someone else run it, like, why would I do that? That's not where we are. Steve Ballmer's actively involved. Josiah in Brooklyn, we'll see what he's like. So there is no answer to that question, but what I actually started to think about is, well, maybe it's the Millers, frankly. You know, Larry was this definitely hands-on, definitely involved, doing weekly radio shows. He wasn't hiding. At the same time, I think probably let his basketball people do their work most of the time. Most of the bad moments in our franchise history from contract standpoints are Larry probably getting too involved on the, you know, in retrospect on contracts that didn't work out. And he generally, whenever we needed financial expenditures for the chance to win, Larry did it. So it's funny because I thought about that question later and realized I answered Peter Holt of the Spurs. I'm not sure I really believe that because I think that's a little bit of an outdated model. But then even on the second level of that, more than anything else, maybe the answer is the Millers. They had the third biggest, best winning percentage of any franchise from the day they took ownership. So maybe it's the Millers. Kind of, you know, maybe that is the model. And you know what? It's worth looking at Ryan Smith and what his progression will be as an owner. And remember what Larry Miller was like, you know, if you go back to the 90s and go back to the mid-90s. And in that stage, you know, that's a different guy than the one who was at his final stages with us before he passed. He went through 20 years of learning how to own and what it meant and what the pitfalls were. There's a progression to it. So the two things that I'm left with today, and we'll talk about how, you know, it's going to be different and what it means here in a second. But the two things I'm left with are, one is, oh my goodness gracious, we should be jumping for joy that we are so fortunate to have somebody in our marketplace with really true ties to our community that just bought the team and had the wealth to do it. And then we should be jumping for joy and just wowed by what we've just been given as a gift from the Millers of their ownership for the last 30 plus years. Pretty amazing. Today's show is brought to you by Intercap Lending. I've told you this before, Steve Carter's the best. Well, I just turned my partner over to Steve Carter. I turned myself over to Steve Carter. Turned family friends over to Steve Carter. And frankly, I would say that I'm probably calling you a friend and turning you over to Steve Carter. Here's what we've done with Intercap Lending. We have given you, we'll give you the corporate discount. So when you call Steve Carter, let him know you're with Locked On, and he will then he'll take care of you. He's unbelievable. I can go read a million reviews for you and tell you how amazing he is, but I can just tell you twice I've done refinances, and I am the old, you guys are probably not surprised to hear that I am the type of person who starts a refi and never finishes it. And the two I've gotten done with any seamless trouble, without any problem, is Steve Carter. If he could have gotten me to write my will on time, he'd really be a superhero. I got that done finally. Call Steve at 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. That's intercaplending.com, and call Steve Carter, 385-885-28, and tell them that Locked On sent you. The refi rates are amazing. You want to get it done by the end of the year. So give Steve Carter a call. Today's show is also brought to you by Built Bar. That's right. The best tasting, unbelievable bar out there. Built Bar is here for you and now has a new product as well. It's called Built Go. So whether it's Built Bar, who we've told you about numerous times and the best tasting protein bar out there on the market, but now Built Go. Built Go is there for you, as Built Go gets you to break through the wall. Easy to take 1.5 ounce packages. The other day I did a super long Peloton ride, two of them back to back because it was cold out. And what I have, I had my Built Go sitting right by my Peloton there for me. You can put it in a briefcase, put it in your golf bag. It's the workout gel, best one on the market. It's like a 5-hour energy, but without that same crash feeling. Plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. Peanut butter, honey, coconut, chocolate, and chocolate mint. Go to builtbar.com for the bars. Go to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCK to get 20% off. 20% off at builtgo.com. Chad Ford's NBA Big Board is out. Jeremy Wu of SI is his guest this week. They'll talk NBA draft. John Hollinger was his guest earlier in the week. He's climbing the iTunes charts and on the top because it's draft season, and Chad Ford's putting up big numbers to grab that. Hollinger and Duncan for you also, as we have some of the leading NBA experts across the Locked On Podcast Network. And then Ben Golliver joined me, and we talked about Daryl Morey to Philadelphia, which we'll get to here in a few minutes, as well as the Ryan Smith and Ashley Smith purchase of the Utah Jazz, as well as Michelle Roberts balking on the start date. We'll get to those things in a second. The other aspect to the Ryan Smith taking over the Jazz is it's going to change. Like, it's the world's going to change. And frankly, that's fine. That's reality. That's hopefully progress. More often than not, change is progress. Change is uncomfortable, and we worry about change, but the truth is that change usually is progress. And so it's going to be different. Again, we think of the Millers at this point of Gale, hands off. Larry used to be pretty hands-on. Larry used to have Matt Harpering and Andre Karolinko in his office for contract negotiations and go see Carl at his house. Like, he was pretty hands-on. We're going back to that. Ryan Smith did not just spend $1.6 billion to sit in the Qualtrics building playing hoops in that and not be involved. He has every right to be involved and hopefully brings great expertise. So it's going to be different in that sense. There's going to be a Ryan Smith, Ashley Smith stamp on this ownership group. That's great. It's part of it. But it's going to be different. He'll be hands-on. We'll feel his presence. Time will tell. And he'll learn. And really, we probably need to let him learn. Because he's a first-time NBA owner. There's no manual for that. The other thing that's pretty big here is the NBA is really an incredible big money game. And if we're really, the Millers might not have had that kind of money. Like, if we start to look at it, Steve Ballmer's net worth is $51 billion. And net worth, by the way, not that I understand these numbers, is a weird number. Like, it's not working capital, it's net worth. And so, if you own the NBA, if you own the Jazz, and the Jazz are valued at $1.6 million, that's part of your net worth, but it's not part of your working capital. Ryan Smith's got some uniqueness in the fact that it does sound as though there was a lot of, you know, that there was a good deal of cash and that he might have some real working capital. Steve Ballmer, $51 billion. He's in a different stratosphere. Ann Schutz, who owns part of the Lakers, $11.2 billion. Stan Kroenke, $10 billion. Joseph Tsai, $10 billion. Robert Parra, Memphis, $7 billion. Daniel Gilbert, $6 billion. Tom Gore, $6 billion. Detroit. Mickey Aronson, $5 billion. Tillman Fertitta, this is a great example of it. $4.4 billion, but evidently hanging on by a string from all reports. Mark Cuban, $4 billion. Joe Harris, 76ers, $4 billion. Gail Benson, $3 billion. Glenn Taylor, $3 billion. Timberwolves. Herb Simon, $3 billion. Let's make sure we understand something, by the way. The difference between like $1 million and $3 million is not the same as $1 billion versus $3 billion. Like if someone's worth $2.6 billion, that six is $600 million. So like when we jump from like $3 billion to $2 billion, that is a mammoth difference. Hawks, $2.4 billion. Michael, $2 billion. Mark Lassery, $2 billion. And the Jazz came in at $1.7 billion. 18th on the market. And how much of that was actually liquid? Like, that's a different game. So that would be the other aspect is that I think that's a real number and a real game changer to have this kind of capital. Does it mean luxury tax? And I mean, frankly, the way the luxury tax rules, I would just never do it. Like, even if I was an owner, it's just so prohibitive. Unless I was, like, really certain you were an NBA title contender. And that was the move. I mean, there's an argument that Ryan Smith could decide to go into luxury tax right now. Because, frankly, the market's going to be so depressed, you could probably get some value on players right now. And you go into the tax and you send a hell of a message to everybody you're willing to go into the tax. So, we'll see. All right. Those are kind of my thoughts there. A few other things going on that are interesting. So, one is the feeling on this draft is there's no stars. For the first time, we have somebody who's an NBA analyst who's come out and basically said there's a star. And David Thorpe of True Hoop just came out and basically wrote that he thinks James Wiseman is somewhere between Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis. Thinks he's unbelievable. And then Kevin O'Connor just came out in his last NBA mock draft on The Ringer and had the Charlotte Hornets trading up for James Wiseman as the number one pick. It's a little bit of a turn here. 7'1", 7'6", wingspan, 237. Like, all of a sudden, you know, a guy that we have suddenly this idea that maybe there actually is a top player on top of this draft. David Thorpe's True Hoop piece was an absolute plea to the world that he was, this guy is going to be unbelievable. Talked about being able to, at 7'1", get down a defensive stance. Talked about him being able to pick and roll and run. Talked about him being able to shoot. Talked about him as this skilled 7'1", somewhere between Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis. Kevin O'Connor's mock draft has Wiseman 1, Edwards 2, and then the kid from Maccabi Tel Aviv 3, who's interesting because he's 6'9", LaMelo Ball 4, and Obi Toppin out of Dayton, the redshirt sophomore, now jumping up to 5. We'll do some of the numbers. I have some of those numbers. I'll do that tomorrow. We'll do another numbers day on the draft tomorrow. Here's some things from those of you who have been listening to our show and our draft breakdowns that are of interest to me. I broke down Jalen Smith. I'd broken down Josh Green, and I'd looked at Jaden McDaniel, and I'd said on those three, like, wow, if that's what's available at 23, then this draft has got amazing depth. Jalen Smith is now being talked about at 13. Okay, that's a little different. The Josh Green is now being talked about at 19, which would be Brooklyn. He'd be perfect because he's the perfect player to play off people. He's frankly perfect for us. Playing at 19. Kind of love him, actually. 6'10 and a quarter wingspan, 6'6", 210, not an elite athlete, didn't get on top of the cup, really shot it well. But body is fabulous. Played with the system, under, comfortable, moving the ball, never looked like he'd be a star, not going to have a hard time adjusting to the NBA, really, really liked him. He had at 23, Jaden McDaniels, who I did the first game watch of, and I'll do another one coming up. You're taking a flyer here. 6'9", 200, did not have a good freshman year, scored 50 in high school, big-time talent, supposedly, 19 years of age, and just a beautiful body. Just an Adonis. And you're taking quite a flyer on that. But you know what? You just don't get 6'9", 200-pound bodies very often. Who can bring the ball up the floor? He's got all the possibilities. You believe in your player development and you believe he's got the mental makeup, woo! You might take that flyer. All right, Michelle Roberts had some interesting comments, and Daryl Morey in Philadelphia has an impact. We'll touch on both those things. Today's show is brought to you by Homie. Homie is revolutionizing the real estate market. And while it's revolutionized real estate market, it is saving you millions. No, not millions. Hundreds? No. Thousands of dollars. You know why? Because we don't sell companies for $1.6 billion. We want to save thousands of dollars. And that matters. That matters. All these massive, crazy, huge numbers being talked about. Let's get back to our world. We're saving $5,000 on closing costs and fees is life-changing. Homie is doing that for you. Homie is selling your home at a set fee. When you buy a home with Homie, they'll work to get you $5,000 back on closing fees and set fees. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about real money for people like us. I sound like a politician. Go to homie.com or text LOCK to text LOCK, you can spell it, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. I got all fired up. I'm running for office. I'm running for office for Homie. We're talking real people money. $5,000 on closing costs. Set fees when you sell a home with Homie. We're not talking $1.6 billion. We're talking relatable. Okay. Text LOCK to 88588 and I'll shut up. LOCK to 88588 and see what Homie can do for you. NBA Big Board, Chad Ford, up and available. Locked on NBA, Ben Golliver, up and available. Hollinger and Duncan up and available. There's so much NBA stuff right now. All right, Michelle Roberts yesterday came out and basically said, whoa. Michelle Roberts, by the way, is the head of the Players Union. And said, wait a second, slow down the horses on this idea that we're playing December 22nd. And this is the beginning of the negotiation. A large part of this negotiation might come down to what the NBA does with the luxury tax. So if you look at the luxury tax, it's projected to go to $139 million. It was at $133 million, and they lost 10% of their revenue this year. So if you go 10% down from 132, you're dropping to 120. If the luxury tax went to 120, it would be catastrophic for spending in the league. So that will be a first part of the negotiation where they smooth that. If they go to 120, the amount of teams over the tax, including probably us, would be astronomical. There'd just be no free agent spending. There'd be no spending, and there'd be just everyone trying to trade players. Even if the luxury tax stays at 132, which was last year's number, and I'm not great at this, but suddenly if the tax stays the same, like Boston, Brooklyn, Golden State, and Philly are in trouble. Philly being in trouble matters. Daryl Morey here in a second. They're like deep in. And maybe Brooklyn with Joe Tsai is fine. We just ran through that ownership. I don't know that Boston's really that fine. Gordon Hayward may get moved at that point. Golden State may be fine, but, you know, part of this was they're getting money for their arena in Philadelphia. The other one that gets interesting is that if the tax stays flat, the amount of teams that get close to 132. Houston, problem. Robert Covington might become available. We talked about him earlier. Indiana. Okay, there's some interesting players. We did Indiana. We broke that down on past episodes. Like a Doug McDermott might become available. You know, are they going to trade a Miles Turner? Who are some of the players that we might be interested in? What are they doing with their multiple point guards at that point? Milwaukee. Suddenly, trying to improve their schedule would be awfully close to being in the tax. So this comment from Michelle Roberts is real. But the first big negotiation, and the cap is one thing, but the tax is way more important on its impact on spending. Okay? So that is the first thing to keep an eye on. Because that's where these teams are going to get in either in trouble or, you know, have to react. It's if the tax, I mean, you start to put that tax down to 132 and you suddenly have, I mean, we get close, frankly. We have a $14 million window right now on our tax, kind of where we're sitting. We would get close. Orlando would get close with one move. The Clippers would get close with a move. They don't care. San Antonio would be close with a move. They certainly care. You could have half the NBA, maybe not all. Memphis would frankly get a little close. So that could be mammoth. That's the number one thing to watch there. All right, let's get to the Daryl Morey takes over Philadelphia. And in depth, I talk about this on Locked On NBA. But the other aspect is he's got five massive contracts. He's got to decide. We can play the Mike Conley game again. It's getting boring, but we do it every day. Like, oh, would you trade Mike Conley for? Like, he's our one salary, right? I feel bad for Mike. Like, it's not worth, he's not, like, he doesn't deserve this, but it's kind of what happens here. So, they have Ben Simmons at $33 million. They're not moving him. Tobias Harris got paid full max. I love Tobias Harris. I thought he'd be great in our system. I did not like him at $34 million this year. So Tobias Harris at 34, 36, 37, 6, and 39, 2 over the next 4 years. Wow. $135 million coming. I think that's about right. I love Tobias Harris. I think he can shoot it. I think he can play with the ball in his hands. I think he's perfect for us. I think he does all sorts of things wonderfully. I think he's bad defensively. I think he doesn't play with enough passion sometimes. I still love Tobias Harris, and I don't know if I love him at that number. Wow. Donovan Mitchell, Tobias Harris, Rudy Gobert gets you where? With Bojan Bogdanovic and Joe Ingles, we'd be deep probably into the tax at that point too, by the way. Any thoughts? Al Horford, 27-5, 27, and 26-5. Talked about the idea of Serge Ibaka the other day. It's pretty unlikely Marc Gasol leaves Toronto, either goes to Europe or signs somewhere in the U.S. he wants to play, plays in Spain or does that, and they re-sign Serge Ibaka for more than the mid-level exception to bring him back. The only problem Toronto could have is the Van Vliet deal gets big, the Ibaka deal gets a little bigger than they want, and they start walking toward the tax, depending on where the tax is. Like, this is where this all plays. Because they're already paying Kyle Lowry $30 million, and they're already paying Fred Van Vliet. Are they going to have to pay Van Vliet $18, $19? Like, what's that number going to be? They're generally pretty good otherwise as they lose Gasol. But, you know, they've got to re-sign. They've got to re-sign some pieces there. I don't think they'd end up in trouble. They've only got $88 million on cap allocations right now. So if you play Van Vliet, you know, call it 18 or something crazy, which seems high for him, but you're like 118, you sign Ibaka for $12 million, you're at 130, you got to fill out your roster. You're suddenly getting right near the tax. That's exactly a perfect example of what we're talking about. So Al Horford, we talked about Serge Ibaka. Does Al Horford do the same thing? Does Al Horford allow you to have a stretch four, play him as a four with Rudy as a five? Like, they tried that with Embiid. It got pretty crowded. Plays your backup center. Like, that didn't just work in Philadelphia. 27, 27, 26, 5. We get huge. We're huge again. And Al Horford's really special. He's a really, really special player. But he's 34 years old. And he declined badly last year. And you better make one heck of a decision of whether he declined badly because of the fact that he was in a unique situation that was bad for him, or whether he just became 34 years old. It's all pretty interesting stuff. Lots to discuss. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Thanks very much for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz. Have a good one. Now go grab one of those other great programs on the Locked On Podcast Network.